Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture, with your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection for Monday, November 4th, 2013. An award-winning singer, songwriter, and guitarist, tonight's guest has taken songs by some of his musical influences, songs that he's been fascinated by, and produced them for his latest CD. The release concert for Jacob Moon's Fascination CD took place this past weekend, and he's on the phone with us tonight to talk about the CD and his influences. But first, let's listen to Revelation from Jacob Moon's new Fascination CD.
Coda, dosa.
And now to our interview with Jacob Moon. Good evening, Jacob.
Hey, how you doing?
Not bad. I was looking at the CD, Fascination, and some of the things that were going on, and looked at some of the material. One of the songs you've got in there is one of the ones by Peter Gabriel, and looking at your website, you cite Gabriel as one of your influences. What is it about his music that inspires you?
Well, there's something kind of like epic about his productions, and something also like deeply intimate about his delivery, and it has to do with his voice, I think, and just the that sort of a melancholy kind of ache in his voice that I just have always related to, and I think that has somehow informed how I sing a little bit, you know, and just his use of rhythm and his use of really killer players that have been able to bring out the complexity and the nuance in his music. It's just something that I've always sought to kind of try to replicate in my own recordings as well. So it's he's one of those guys for me that he writes stand-up songs that just endure the test of time. So yeah, I love him.
Now, are you primarily attracted to his solo stuff or the stuff that he did with Genesis?
Yeah, I'm not really that familiar with the stuff that he did with Genesis. I think it was a little before my time, if you will. I mean, there's a lot of things that I listened to that were before my time, but that, for some reason, that era, it never really grabbed me. I'm not sure if it was just sonically, it sounded like it was out of the dark past or something, but it was just, it wasn't until Phil Collins kind of started taking over that I sort of paid more attention to what they were doing and was just kind of impressed about what they could accomplish with just three or four guys kind of thing. And there's more of a modern kind of sound to that band, I think, possibly, than the stuff with Hackett and Gabriel and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. it's, Yeah, I don't know. I definitely caught on to Gabriel kind of in the mid '80s when he started, you know, getting big with his So record, and In Your Eyes was one of the songs that from way back I remember hearing live and seeing live on when Much Music would air the concert video. I was always really entranced with his performance of that song, and so. That went on the album for that reason. It's just it's a song that I've been singing live for, you know, gosh, like probably 18 years, you know. So it was well cooked by the time it kind of went to tape. So
well, looking at that, and I think, you know, looking at Gabriel's music, but who are some of your other musical influences?
I mean, for me, it crosses a lot of genres and boundaries, and it's everything from in the classical world, you know, like Vaughan Williams. I love the kind of English string music, and in the jazz world, I love the sort of the solo kind of one man against the world kind of ethos of Keith Jarrett and his approach to the piano. You know, I'm not a piano player. I've definitely taken lots of cues and inspiration from his solo concerts, and not as much his jazz trio stuff, because that's sort of an idiom that I think is a little bit outside of what I do, you know. But it's and then if you cross into singer-songwriters, it's guys like James Taylor and Paul Simon, Joni Mitchell, Sean Colvin, you know, John Hyatt, Lyle Lovett. These are some of the guys that were lionized in the music press back in the 80s and 90s before sort of the death of the music industry in a way. And then sort of the industry sort of failed to kind of support those acts, and they were just kind of able to survive based on the notoriety that they'd gained in their heyday, you know, I sort of mourn the loss of some of that sort of star system of songwriters, you know. And there's a time when it was kind of the music magazines would kind of curate the music and kind of put it out there, and it would be reviewed, and the reviews were really important, and they helped kind of like frame it for you. And of course, this was a bit day before the internet and before you could really sample it yourself. So the only way to sample it was to buy it. And so now that's kind of gone the way of the dodo, for good or bad, you know. And those are the artists that I kind of picked up on because I was kind of paying attention to that whole world, you know. And and that really, again, all the interviews and all the stuff that those artists said were not just influential musically, but influential on my career and how I think about being a musician.
Well, and it sounds like, you know, some of the artists too were the ones that are a lot of them are storytellers. There's that whole storytelling component to their writing that in some cases has gotten lost. When did you yourself actually begin songwriting?
I wrote songs probably going back to my university days. I started writing tunes, you know, the first time a girl breaks your heart, that's when you start writing songs usually. So for me, that's when it started, around 93 or so. And maybe I had a couple of shots at writing kind of juvenile songs earlier on from that in high school, but yeah, it was probably university that I started writing, and then I formalized those onto a CD that I released in '93 that isn't available in print anymore, but it's called On the Trail, and about 500 unlucky people managed to purchase that one in the first year it came out, and then it was out of print, and I moved on to the next record, which is I think probably wise, you know, when you make your first record, it's just gonna make it and then move on because you've got new ideas, you've got a new way of looking at I mean, almost immediately after making any record, I feel like making another one, you know. I feel like I've learned so much in the making of that record that I want to bring that to bear on the next recording. So it's but songwriting is something I've been doing since kind of the early '90s.
Well, one of the things you also do along with the songwriting is you also arrange stuff. I mean, like you talk about In Your Eyes, you know, you've got Limelight, subdivisions, and so sort of taking songs that are already out there and putting your own twist on it. When did you start doing that?
Well, that, I mean, was probably going back to when I started playing in clubs and pubs and stuff, and just kind of doing these gigs where you'd start at 10:30 at night and play till 2 in the morning and play for people who weren't really listening. And I thought, well, if they're not listening, then they don't care if I change the song. So I'll just change the songs and kind of mess with them a little bit. Because I'd sort of picked up, I picked up on the fact that people, if they did cover songs, they usually tried to put their stamp on it. And so I kind of gathered that was the thing to do if you're going to be a real musician. It's not just to kind of slavishly cover the songs, although I did my share of that too. And I think you need to do that. I think you need to, before you can, you've got to kind of copy people before you can kind of innovate, you know, and imitate before you innovate. This is kind of the mantra there, you know. It's so singing the songs of whoever, Paul Simon, The Police, you know, Steely Dan or whatever, these are the songs I was singing, and they were kind of guiding my vocal, muscle memory, and they were guiding my my sense of harmony and my sense of rhythm on the guitar. And then I could kind of bring that to bear on songs I was writing or songs that I was going to be arranging by those artists. So, that's kind of when I got started was probably in those first few years of playing professionally in the 90s.
Well, what I want to do is I want to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with our guest, guitarist Jacob Moon. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM, your inspiration station.
Living on a lighted stage. Approaches the unreal. For those who think and feel in touch with some reality beyond the gilded cage.
Back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to Limelight from the Fascination CD by Jacob Moon. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to continue our conversation with Jacob. You've got Limelight, you've got Subdivisions, you've got a whole bunch of different, all these cover tunes on your CD. How did you choose which ones you were going to cover?
Yeah, I mean, these are songs, most of them were songs that I was already covering in some way in my live show. But a couple of them, notably Limelight and Owner of a Lonely Heart, were songs that were kind of in my to-do list for the last maybe year and a half. and I just hadn't really gotten around. I mean, it's something about, you know, it wasn't really pressing to do it, and so, and I knew that it was going to be a lot of work to arrange them, and I was looking at it from the perspective of, I've got to arrange these songs and play them solo, live. And the pressure of that was very prohibitive, and I was really not wanting to go down that road, because I just knew how much insane amount of work it was going to be. And that's hard to take on, that work, when you're out touring and you need to be focused on promoting shows, booking shows, playing shows. It's just hard to kind of get the dozens of hours that you need in to create a new arrangement and master it. So I'm kind of looking at this record in an interesting way. I decided I would arrange them on the computer, give the parts out to real musicians, record them as band versions, and now I'm going back to those songs and relearning them as solo compositions, which is much easier, oddly enough. I'm really enjoying the process of, for example, yesterday I spent all day trying to learn Owner of a Lonely Heart, which I believe you guys will be playing today. And Owner of a Lonely Heart is a Yes song from the 80s, and I kind of did a totally different arrangement with it, with kind of a funk beat, and slowed it down and put lots of kind of Meters style kind of New Orleans funk moments into the song.
I was going to say it's totally,
yeah. So it's a fun song, but now I can play it pretty well. I mean, I can sort of conceive of a looping arrangement of it based on all the work that I've done in arranging it for the band. So I think that's going forward. That might be the way to expedite future arrangements, is to not worry about having to play it live initially, and just conceive of the idea and then see if there's a way to arrange it for solo.
I was going to say, I mean, I listened to Owner of a Lonely Heart, and yeah, the total different arrangement from the 80s. I mean, but the whole thing is when you're doing this, and when you're doing the looping, stuff like that, is it a challenge to try and take, you know, you've got, you know, phenomenal musicians and Yes that did Owner of a Lonely Heart. You know, some of the Rush songs, they've done so much in the studio, even with just the three guys in that. How do you try and take that type of thing and do it as a one-man show, even with the looping?
Yeah, I mean, these are songs, right? I mean, songs, if it's a good song, the test of that is, can it be played by one guy on one acoustic guitar or piano or whatever? And if it can, then the song stands up. And if it can't, then it's something else. It's like it's an epic arrangement of some kind, but it's not like a song in the classical sense of that word. And so it was a test for me to put all these songs to that test and see if I could pass that test for these songs. And most of them, I had the experience of passing that test by playing them live for years. Subdivisions is an example. I mean, that's one that sort of, it stretches a little bit the, it pushes me to the limit of what I can do on my own and still kind of, do it capably. And it's one of those songs that's got a lot of layers, it's got a lot of changes, meter changes, harmony changes, and little moments like the dictaphone of me holding up the dictaphone to the microphone and it's saying subdivisions, and then me sort of looping these different chord progressions and playing solos over top of them. So it can be tricky to keep track of all the layers, but ultimately, if you can pare it down to the essential few layers, then you can execute most songs, I would say. You know what I mean? If with a little bit of practice, and I might be one of the only ones out there that's kind of trying to do that, but it by no means has to be just me out there doing it. It's definitely doable by more folks, and it's just fun to do. It's just if you've got the obsessive mindset to pursue those creative ideas to their ultimate end, you know. And it's I think I probably have that for whatever reason.
You know, a little earlier, you were talking about the sort of the change in the industry and that, and one of the big changes right now is the way records get produced and funded in that. And you did the crowdfunding route to go for Fascination. What are you learning from that whole process? Because I think that's your second CD that you did with crowdfunding, right?
Yeah, I did one last year with crowdfunding and learned that you have to kind of do it in stages, and you've got to, you got to pick two good windows if you can. Pick a window to crowdfund for the making of the record, the sort of the early studio and musician fees and all that stuff stage. And then you've got to have a separate crowdfunding time for pre-sales, which is kind of just a month preceding the release of the record. And that is the time to gather some funds to pay for things like licensing fees and manufacturing costs. And, I think as long as you kind of are telling a compelling story and you're making a product that is in demand and you're offering rewards on your site that are commensurate or greater than the value of the contribution and that people are going to be making, then I think you're off to the races. I think there's lots of opportunity for people to who haven't crowdfunded before for making their records to consider tapping into it. And I think it's valuable. I've heard of people who have pursued, Factor funding or Arts Council funding for their records, and they've written these long, long applications and sent them in, and then they don't get the grant, right? And so they're kind of out of luck for financing on their record, and then it's time to release the record. That's, I think, an outmoded way of going. I think the way to go is if you actually do have a fan base. If you don't, then I think you still need to go that way. But if you do have a fan base, you're crazy not to involve them in the process and get them anticipating the record and get them excited about it, and let them really feel part of it and let them in on the process every step of the way.
Well, we need to take one final break and come back and wrap up our conversation with singer-songwriter Jacob Moon. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM, your inspiration station.
Free will a chance. You got to want to succeed.
Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to Owner of a Lonely Heart from Jacob Moon's new Fascination CD. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to finish up our conversation with singer-songwriter Jacob Moon. Jacob, looking at what's been happening, what's next on the agenda for you? I assume you've got some tours coming up in promotion of Fascination?
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to be doing some CD release concerts. I'll be actually in Waterloo. I know you guys are in your Waterloo station there. So I'll be playing at St. John's Lutheran in Waterloo on November the 2nd, doing a sort of a CD release concert. It's a concert with the Waterloo Chamber Players, and they're a little small orchestra. They're going to be backing me up on a number of songs from Fascination, which is kind of fun. And then I'll be doing a CD release party in Hamilton on the 3rd of November at the Staircase, on the 22nd of November in Oakville at the Oakville Center. And I will be on tour opening up for Marillion, which is one of the acts that I covered on this record, in Europe 2 weeks from today. I'll be leaving for Europe and spending about 12 days out there traveling the UK, Germany, France, and Netherlands.
Great. Now, if people are interested in learning more about Fascination or more about you and even getting a copy, how can they do that?
Yeah, just head on over to jacobmoon.com and all the details for how to order the new CD and where I'll be playing and all that good stuff are right up there.
Great. Jacob, thank you for your time today.
Robert, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
And thank you for listening to Arts Connection. Thank you to my guest, Jacob Moon. And if you miss a broadcast or want to hear it again, look for an archive program on our website at www.salemministries.ca. Be sure to tune in next week for another look at where faith, art, and Canadian culture meet. For more information on Arts Connection, email robert@salemministries, that's S-E-L-A-W ministries.ca, or follow us on Twitter at Selaw13, S-E-L-A-W-13. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.
You've been listening to Arts Connection, a production of Selaw Ministries. Be sure to tune in again next Thursday evening at 10, right here on Faith FM.